This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. According to what is known as the ex-gay movement, God wants every man and woman to be a heterosexual. Therefore, a homosexual can convert to heterosexuality by being born again and praying to Jesus. The ex-gay movement is centered around ministries dedicated to helping gays become straight. The debate surrounding the movement is about the legitimacy of gay identity itself, writes my first guest, Tanya Erzin. She writes about the movement in a new book called Straight to Jesus. A little later, we'll hear from the head of the largest ex-gay ministry and from a man who describes himself as ex-ex-gay. After years in an ex-gay ministry, he gave up and came out. Tanya Erzin's book, Straight to Jesus, is based on an ethnographic study she conducted over the course of 18 months at what she describes as the oldest and most established residential ex-gay program. It's located in the San Francisco Bay Area. Erzin is an assistant professor of comparative studies at Ohio State University. So what is the process like in the ex-gay movement of converting to heterosexuality or trying to?
Well, I spent most of my time was a place called New Hope, and it's a residential program. There's only about three or four of them at this point, and many of the groups just meet on a weekly basis, but this group, people apply, and they end up spending a year at a ministry. During that time, they live together communally. They take classes as part of they have a workbook called Steps Out of Homosexuality, where they learn about what are the origins of homosexuality, is it an addiction, how do you get in touch with your masculinity. They go to Bible study. They have small accountability groups where they every week talk about issues that may have come up. Did you have a sexual thought about someone of the same sex, etc.? They'd sometimes do individual counseling or therapy, but the real idea of it is that through living communally, living with other people who are going through the same experience, is that in itself is what's going to change people. The basis of the ex-gay movement, or then the basis of reparative therapy, is this idea that people are gay because they did not bond with their same-sex parent as a child. And so by living with same-sex people and learning to develop friendships with them, they will eventually recover their masculinity and their femininity, and also thereby try to move out of homosexuality.
You describe the ex-gay movement as a mix of prayer, 12-step programs, and self-help. Mm-hmm. Where does the self-help part come in?
The movement uses more of it borrows from 12-step principles and 12-step groups like AA and NA, and most of the people I talked to had been through a group like that at some point. The emphasis is more on being accountable and testifying about anything you're thinking or feeling or doing that would be hindering your process towards, overcoming your homosexuality. And so they meet with they have these accountability sheets that they fill out every week that are quite long and detailed, where they have to answer questions like, have you had an impure thought? Have you looked at pornography? Have you masturbated? And then every week they bring these in and they discuss them in small groups. Every possible instance of an interaction with somebody, something they saw outside the ministry, something that happened at work, all of these things are always spoken aloud, always told to other people, and that's part of this accountability process. And the ministry really emphasizes that testifying to others about what you're thinking or feeling is really part of this healing process. And over time, they're encouraged to create a testimony about their own life. I was this. I was a homosexual. I had a problem with alcoholism, and now I am born again, and now I am saved. And so this idea of testifying, of giving testimony, and being publicly intimate about what's going on with you is sort of really key to the therapeutic part of healing their homosexuality.
Now, you said that there are workshops to help men in the ex-gay programs get in touch with their masculinity. What are the things that they are encouraged to do and things they're discouraged from doing?
Well, one of the things at the ministry, they had an event called Straight Man Night, and that was the men from the local church would come and visit, and they would, they were heterosexual men or straight men, and the men at the ministry would ask these men from the church questions about what it means to be a heterosexual man, because they were legitimately curious and almost befuddled by what it means to be heterosexual. They just felt like they often talked about heterosexual men as being part of a different species almost. But they would ask them questions like, are you attracted to men? What is sex like in marriage? How do you deal with lust as a Christian? You know, how do you communicate with your wife? But there was a sort of real yearning to know what it meant to be masculine, what it meant to be a straight man. They would also every weekend do these trips. Often they'd go camping. They played basketball, all of these sort of sports and what would be, in a way, stereotypical kind of masculine activities to try and help men build up a sense of masculinity. And I would often say, well, don't you think there's a lot of different ways to be masculine? And many of them agreed, but many of them said that as children, they felt very alienated from playing sports and doing the things that are typically or things that boys are supposed to do, and that in doing these things, it helped them to feel more like men and to feel better about themselves in general.
And what are some of the things that the men in these workshops are discouraged from doing because it's considered too gay?
Well, the program has a manual of rules and regulations, and it's everything. One of the things that I found funny, it was, they called it camping, not in the sense of pitching a tent and going out in the woods, but any kind of humor that they called it that was ironic or that would link them to their past lifestyle. So any kind of sarcastic humor, which was, you know, happening in a part of the ministry all the time. They couldn't wear certain kinds of clothing, and it was actually very specific. No biker shorts or half shirts or mesh shirts. They weren't allowed to go to join a health club. They weren't allowed to smoke cigarettes. A couple of years before, two men had been sharing a cigarette and it ended up kissing, and the ministry believed that that's can be a semi-homoerotic act. And one of the first times I was there, I was sitting outside talking to somebody who was smoking, and someone else yelled from the window, "You're breaking the rules," and he yelled, "Well, it doesn't matter. She's a woman." But there was an emphasis on a lot of the sort of small things that would keep them from having a potential sexual fall, and that they were seen as somehow effeminate or linking them to what they call their past lives or being gay.
What are the men told to do about their attractions when they feel them? Attractions to other men?
They're told to express it publicly to other men in a small group, to one of the house leaders who are people who have gone.
You like to confess?
To confess, yeah. To confess and to testify about it publicly. To confess to another person, to confess to the group. I mean, it really, I talk about it in my book, I call it public intimacy, but I was always really amazed at how people were very comfortable with expressing publicly to me were very intimate things about themselves, even to people they didn't know that well, like myself at first. And there really is a huge emphasis on it doesn't necessarily matter what you've done, but as long as you've admitted it, you've confessed it, you've talked about it in a public way, you've testified about it, then you can receive forgiveness and you can stay in the ministry. It's anything that's kept secret, that's kept concealed, is considered damaging, and that's the kind of behavior that would get somebody kicked out.
What are the theories that the ex-gay movement has for the existence of homosexuality?
The major theory is often called reparative therapy, and it's the idea that as children, boys and girls did not bond properly with their same-sex parent, that their parent was absent from their lives or they had an inappropriate relationship, and therefore their same-sex attractions are a result of this deficient relationship with their same-sex parent. And so the idea is to, what they call it, repairing the deficit, that you, again, try to develop non-sexual relationships with members of the same sex, and that in so doing, you repair this lack that you had as a child and, again, recover or recuperate your heterosexuality. And I think implicit in that idea is that heterosexuality is the norm, that it's inside everyone, and that homosexuality is just this divergent path that people take as a result of these failed relationships with their parents.
How do the parents of people in the ex-gay movement feel about this? Because it's their relationship that's being, you know, blamed for their child's homosexuality.
Right. You're definitely right. Anita Worthen, who was the wife of Frank Worthen, who ran the ministry where I did my research, when she married Frank, that was one of the things she felt, that a lot of this tended to blame the parent, and then in so doing, only further alienated parents, and that they blame, especially the blame was often placed on mothers. And so one of the things that she did was really try to, she developed a ministry for parents. They have small groups and different conferences for parents. She writes in their monthly newsletter a column about issues, parenting issues, and she comes to that from her own specific experience. She has a gay son. He knows the work that she does, and he lived for time in the same apartment complex where they had the ex-gay ministry, but he's gay. He's never wanted to try and change. She disagrees with the ex-gay movement, and she often talks about this issue of how you can love your children, but not necessarily, and you can be tolerant, but not accept what they're doing. She, more than anyone, I think, has really put the emphasis on trying to bring parents into the movement and try to say, yes, there are these problems, but that happen between a relationship between a parent and a child that cause homosexuality according to the movement. But there are all these things you can do as a good parent, and it's not just your fault.
People in the ex-gay movement are encouraged to enter heterosexual marriages, and that's what happened to the founder of the movement and to the current president of Exodus. When somebody in the ex-gay movement enters into a heterosexual marriage, it's a sign of success for them, but what about the person they're marrying? Are they encouraged to tell the person they're marrying that they're gay and now ex-gay and that they had or perhaps still have homosexual impulses?
They're definitely encouraged to tell that person. They, as I said before, really discourage any kind of secrecy. Many of the people I knew ended up marrying or becoming involved with women, or some of them who did become involved with women became involved with women at the local church, and the church was already aware of what the ministry was doing and who these men were. More and more, they're trying to have workshops for people who are involved with an ex-gay person to try and talk about what those issues would be. And I sat in on a workshop once that was for women married to ex-gay men. And the woman leading the workshop, her husband was an ex-gay man. And over time, he had been having secret affairs with men she didn't realize. And when she did, he ended up going to an ex-gay ministry. And now they run a ministry for couples. It was interesting because a lot of them were asking questions like, am I required as a Christian wife to continue to have sex with my husband if I know he's strayed with a man? You know, what do I do about things like the possibility of protecting myself from disease? And there was a real urgency to their questions and a real sense that they didn't know what to do. And I think the movement is trying to address that more and more in open communication for people who do end up being involved with someone.
Now, the Christian evangelical movement has had homosexuality higher on its list of issues. The movement is very against gay marriage, sees homosexuality as a very non-Christian impulse. How has the ex-gay movement affected how the larger Christian right sees homosexuality and the language they use to talk about it? Has it had an effect?
It definitely has had an effect. And I would say in the major way is that instead of just using anti-gay rhetoric, an organization like Focus on the Family, which is run by James Dobson and is a large Christian right, conservative Christian organization, instead of saying, "Gay, this is vile or disgusting and we're anti-gay," what the ex-gay movement allows them to do is to say, look at evidence, this evidence of people who have changed. We have Alan Chambers, who's the president of Exodus. We have all of these testimonies. Therefore, people can change, and instead of saying we're anti-gay, we can argue that instead we should direct people to an ex-gay ministry and a church where someone comes to their pastor and minister and says, I think I might be gay. That pastor and minister, according to certain organizations, should then tell that person they should go to an ex-gay ministry. What's dangerous about the movement, I think, is instead of this anti-gay vitriol, they basically argue that gay identity doesn't exist, that you can change if you are compassionate towards a person who is gay, love the sinner, hate the sin, that person will change, will become part of next gay ministry. And therefore, they can justify arguing against rights for gay marriage, for adoption policy, for any kind of gay civil rights. Because if an identity doesn't exist, why should you recognize it with any kinds of rights or protections?
Well, Tanya Erzin, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Tanya Erzin is the author of Straight to Jesus. She teaches at Ohio State University.